This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 10th of May 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 9th of May 2019, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Barbara Kearns.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Katie Watkins.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: Major projects face review after city election shock. Louis investigates Mothers on the Edge. And final curtain for festival. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Major projects face review after city election shock. Winchester's new civic chiefs say they will carry out an urgent review of the city's major projects, including the new £38 million leisure centre, after taking control in last week's local elections. Last Thursday, voters turned to back the Liberal Democrats, who have been in opposition for 9 years. It was a shock result. The ruling Conservatives suffered heavy losses as five of their councillors were booted out, including senior Tory Guy Ashton, the finance portfolio holder. Now, Councillor Lucille Thompson, the Lib Dem group leader, who is expected to take control of the council when its cabinet is announced, has set an urgent review of the council's major schemes to begin this week. In opposition, the Lib Dems have been highly critical of the decision of the Conservatives. Most notable, the move to reduce the Leicestershire Centre's sports hall in size from 12 courts to 8. Councillor Thompson said, "I am absolutely delighted with the result we achieved last Thursday. It was more than we had expected and now gives us a real opportunity to press ahead with our manifesto promises. We want to put the environment at the top of the council's agenda and we have set ourselves some challenging objectives. We want to run the council in an open and transparent way, ensuring that residents' views are heard and that they get a proper say on how services are run. We will be having an urgent review of all the major projects to see what options are available to us. I am kicking that process off this week." Speaking on the night, Councillor Thompson denied the result was due to national frustrations. She said, "I'm not putting this down to Brexit. I know a lot of people are saying the Conservatives face backlash over the whole situation in Westminster. The truth is, we have very much campaigned hard." Meanwhile, Councillor Kim Gottlieb, a former Conservative who beat Guy Ashton to take the St Michael ward by a surprisingly large majority, added, "Although the shambles in Westminster clearly had a bearing on the local election, voters across the district recognised that it was more than matched by a shambolic Conservative administration in Westminster. In the city ward of St Michael, my history with Silver Hill also clearly had a bearing, with almost universal support for a regeneration of the site along lines I have frequently proposed and the idea of creating a beating heart for the city. Voters were also unimpressed by the Conservatives' inexplicable decision to reduce the size of the sports hall at Bar End and by their efforts to stymie change by rushing things through before the election. There is much to consider urgently, but we will make every effort to improve this important facility. Councillor Gottlieb will provide a dilemma for the Lib Dem administration when choosing their cabinet. Due to his links to Silver Hill scheme, now known as Saxon Gate, he is a high-profile figure for the party. However, his recent bid to sell the St Clement's surgery to the City Council would create problems when it comes to making future decisions on the scheme. Among the other big names to lose their seats on Winchester City Council last week were environment portfolio holder Jan Warwick and former mayor and long-serving councillor Eileen Berry. Former council leader Caroline Horrell, who kept her seat in the Wanston and Mitchell-Dever ward, added, "We need to regroup and hold the Lib Dems to account. We will come back and appeal to the people of Winchester." It will be interesting to see what happens under the new leadership. The Lib Dems were constantly opposing us, so I wonder what will happen. Away from the main parties, the vote saw a good result for the Green Party, who knocked Labour into fourth place in all the wards they were both fielding a candidate in, except for St Luke ward, covering Stanmore. The political makeup of Winchester City Council now consists of 18 seats for the Conservatives and 27 seats for the Lib Dems. A total of 40,317 votes were cast, with a turnout of 45.1%.
Louis investigates mothers on the edge. A Winchester mother and baby unit is to feature in a new Louis Theroux documentary set to be broadcast this weekend. The TV star visited Melbury Lodge off Queen's Road while filming his latest programme, Mothers on the Edge, which focuses on postpartum mental health. Throughout the documentary, Louis follows four mothers, their babies and their families, as they battle a variety of mental health issues, both as inpatients and at home. The unit, which is one of two hospitals to be included, is run by Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust and provides round-the-clock support for mothers experiencing postpartum psychosis. Louis said, "I enjoyed being on the unit. I found it to be a very human, warm place. There have been cuts in funding across the board in the National Health Service, but these units are one area where authorities have maybe had a sense that they need funding." Postpartum psychosis affects one in every 500 women who give birth and can trigger a range of symptoms from extreme low and high moods to dangerous paranoia and delusions. And this documentary is going to be airing on BBC Two this coming Sunday at 9 p.m.
Final curtain for festival. One of the main cultural events in the Winchester calendar has announced that this year will be its last. The Winchester Festival shocked its supporters by announcing at its launch last week that it was folding after 22 years. The final festival will run from July the 5th to the 13th and will feature Andrew Marr, Michael Palin, Ed Balls, Simon Sharma and Chris Bonington, as well as classical music and poetry. In a statement, the festival said, "Since the festival started in 1998, there has been an extraordinary increase in the number of concerts and talks happening in Winchester, so that every week, almost every day, there are wonderful performances across the city. Winchester now has a wealth of music and literature throughout the year, and we have decided with a great deal of deliberation and a lot of sadness that this will be the final Winchester Festival. We hope you will find many events to interest you in this year's programme and that our last festival will be one to remember. We are hugely grateful and indebted to everyone who has been involved with the festival over the last 22 years. The sponsors, individual donors and patrons, the county and city councils, the local performers and the performers who come to us from much further afield, the staff and volunteers, and most of all, the audiences. Indeed, everyone who has made the festival so inspiring and rewarding to be involved with." A spokesman was asked about its financial position, but had not responded at the time of going to press. A city council spokesman said, "We are saddened to hear that this will be the final year of the Winchester Festival and recognise the value of cultural events such as this to our district. Over the last 10 years, the number of events in the Winchester district has grown substantially, and the city now boasts a busy schedule of festivals that provide a sense of cultural vibrancy. We would like to extend our thanks to those who have organised this excellent event over the last 22 years and we are proud to have supported it. City MP Steve Bryan added, "This event has become a staple of the spring for me, and it was a lovely setting this year for sure. I think we're all sorry to see it end in 2019, but the committee are certainly going out with a blast. It's a fantastic programme this year, and I wish them every success."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Russell, David Malcolm Russell, at Flowerdown Nursing Home on the 19th of April, aged 84. Smart, Edna Marie Smart, née Fulger, on the 30th of April, aged 92. And next, we have Christian comment.
This week's Christian comment has been written by Rosemary A. Baker, and she's writing about developing and understanding friends. This weekend, I had a eureka moment. I'm afraid it wasn't a religious experience. I had a request from my ex-sister-in-law to become one of her friends on Facebook. What was so momentous about that, you might think? Well, some years ago, before she and my brother were divorced, she took offence at something I said, and I became persona non grata. I did my best to atone, but it was not to be. Over recent years, with my parents' illnesses and deaths, and then her children growing up and having their own children, the iciness has thawed, and I have noticed more positive vibes. Then we met at her daughter's house for a family lunch and Easter egg hunt on Good Friday, and all got on really well. Then, this weekend, came my complete restoration, a request to be a friend. I replied in the affirmative the next day. I did, though, have a wonderful experience that was definitely religious. I was invited by a friend to attend a special church service. It was an opportunity to listen to two powerful testimonies, as well as to meet up with old friends, and also to make new ones. At the moment, I am listening to an audiobook, which is a fictional story about friendship, and indeed relationships. As well as murder and all sorts of other nasties, it is a story of six children who have formed a club. They are Catholic, Anglican, and even apparently Methodist. One lad is actually Jewish. Together they support each other with family traumas, growing up, and the bad things that happen. This is interwoven with what happens to their families and other people who live in the village. Friendship also develops between the adults, and they realise that their faith beliefs, which once divided them, are artificial barriers, and they too are stronger together. We also see the good and bad in some of the followers of the various denominations and faiths. There is a murdering paedophile priest, but kind, wise and helpful nuns. I shall be sorry when the story ends, but reflecting on it has been very helpful in giving expression to my understanding of human nature. In the Sundays after Easter, the readings cover the resurrection appearances of Jesus to his friends. We have two stories of him appearing to the disciples, the journey to Emmaus and his conversion with Peter on the lake shore. Jesus sees the flaws in his friends, their lack of understanding, their doubts and denials of knowing him. And yet, ultimately, many of them also, in the words of Jesus, laid down their lives for their friends. Rosemary A. Baker.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. or by writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have a variety of letters this week, as always, covering the usual topics. Well, there are a few about the election, and of course, planning issues figure largely.
And this first letter is entitled Many Thanks, and it's from Andrew Adams, who is the election agent of Winchester Labour Party. Sir, I congratulate all the newly elected councillors on Winchester City Council and wish them well in fulfilling their duties. I also thank those outgoing councillors and everyone who put themselves forward as candidates for their service to our community. It was dispiriting to review so many spoilt ballots, many more than usual, and see those who seek to represent their fellow residents on the City Council dealing with the most local of issues dismissed entirely due to national political issues over which they have no control. Local councillors and candidates are ultimately ordinary people, usually with ordinary jobs, giving up their time to help run our city. May I also thank Laura Taylor and all her staff at the election count. There were frustrations on the night. When you pack a lot of tired, emotional people who have put their heart and soul into the campaign for many weeks and all day into a hot room with no refreshments for 6+ hours and a very slow-moving process, it is inevitable that nerves will start to fray. Winchester City Council chooses to conduct election counts in a manner that is very onerous and time-consuming compared to some other authorities, insisting that every ballot paper in the entire district is tallied before a single one is actually counted. Given the timescales that this requires, it would be better, in my view, to move to a daytime count the day after polling, when people can approach the process after some rest, and I hope that this will be considered for future years. Thank you to everyone who voted Labour in Winchester. We will continue to be a challenging voice on behalf of local people in the year to come. That's from Andrew Adams, election agent for the Winchester Labour Party, Harvest Court, Mitchell Devor Station.
And this second letter is on a related point from Karen Barrett, and it's entitled Petty Officialdom. Sir, a traditional, albeit unofficial, part of the election process involves volunteers from all parties spending many hours taking numbers at polling stations. Tellers are well aware of the rules regarding their activities on election days, and I can't remember any particular problems in the past. Unlike previous years, however, tellers at the recent City Council elections were not allowed to sit undercover even when well away from the room where voting took place. They were also told they could not access buildings to use the toilet, and at one location, tellers were initially prevented from taking chairs outside to sit on. These unnecessary restrictions not only cause problems for tellers, many of whom are elderly, but also for the polling station officials, obliged to act as enforcers. This apparently led to an incident at the Guildhall polling station, where the police were called. There may be a bit more sympathy for the council's zealousness if it extended to the main business of the day, namely the count. As one of the candidates, I arrived at River Park just after 10 p.m, fully intending to stay until the results were declared. After the verification part of the process was completed, we waited for the actual count to start, and waited, and waited. In the meantime, candidates and supporters drifted around chatting while council staff remained at their posts with nothing to do. As we approached 1 a.m. with no sign of the count starting, I decided to call it a day and went home. By then, other cities had already declared, so I'm at a loss to understand why Winchester took until 4 a.m. Given that other elections may not be far away, I hope that next time we can look forward to a slicker operation where the count is concerned and a bit less petty officialdom in other areas. And that's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And another letter on politics. This is from Martin Simpson. Labour wants to deselect MP. Sir, I'm a Conservative Party member and Leave campaigner who has had enough of the mess being made by those MPs who are working to stop implementation of the referendum, ignore or redefine the 2017 party manifesto, and who continue to vote to keep Mrs. May in place. Locally, our MP, Steve Brine, has said he wants to respect the referendum whilst he voted to keep our incompetent PM in place, regardless of her atrocious performance. Notably, he also voted for the Cooper Bill and wants to prevent us walking away from negotiations and leaving without a deal in any circumstances. An act of sabotage that is likely to either stop Brexit completely or carry through Brexit in name only with Corbyn support. The failure to deliver a proper Brexit isn't just a hammer blow to the country and national interest. It makes our country an international laughingstock. For what it's worth, it is also destroying our voting base and making a Corbyn neo-Marxist government not only possible but likely. So for Winchester, I'm collecting signatures now, asking for a special meeting of all local Conservative members. The motion? To propose the immediate deselection of Steve Brine as prospective Conservative candidate for the Winchester constituency in the next general election, and the commencement of proceedings to select a new replacement candidate. If you would like to sign the petition, you must be a current member of Winchester Conservative Association. For full details on how to sign, please contact me on deselectstevebrine, all one word, at hotmail.com. And that's from Martin Simpson of Benenden Green, Alsford.
In this letter, David Simons asks for transparency. Sir Peter Rees wrote in last week's Chronicle about, quote, honesty and decency and transparency, unquote, on behalf of the Labour Party. But according to his colleagues with whom I spoke at the recent local elections count, he does not in fact support Mr. Corbyn. Can he come out and be transparent and honest about that, please? Despite my defeat last week in St. Paul Ward, I, for my part, will continue to talk to neighbours and seek to represent, one day possibly, their views, whatever their political affiliations. But please, can we have less casting unfair aspersions upon opponents for cynical political gain? It does no good. People are sick of it. That's from David Simons, Sleepers Dell Gardens, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Jenny Waddington, entitled Distorted. Sir, I write with disdain and bemusement to a letter written last week in the Chronicle by Judith Martin, entitled Well Dressed. I cannot see how anything can be gained, in my opinion, by inaccurately judging someone for where they shop. Certainly what was probably an off-the-cuff remark by Ian Tate has been magnified and distorted. What does it matter where people shop? Surely the integrity of the individual is of greater importance. Certainly, from first-hand experience with Mr. Tate, he was working hard for our ward. He always responded swiftly and effectively to resolve issues. He told me that he very much looked forward to my stinging emails. I think one needs to look further at the councillor's said achievements rather than what they are wearing and where they shop. And that is from Jenny Waddington, Bar End Road, Winchester.
And a letter from Roger Mallin, entitled Bypass Now. Sir, is Winchester being choked by its success as an attractive place to live? I say definitely yes. You now have the centre of this beautiful historic town continually blighted and polluted by heavy traffic, and it is not helped by the council's insistence in putting all the city's commercial, retail and recreational facilities together with the M3 access in Winnall and Bar End. This enclave, with poor access and completely surrounded by the South Downs National Park, is to the east of the city and well away from its residents, who live to the west. The council appears to be sleepwalking into the future whilst pandering to the vociferous pressure groups that abound in the city. They are like ostriches with their heads buried in the sand. All future residential growth in Winchester will be to the west and north, which means even more polluting traffic trundling along its already antiquated roads, and this makes a city centre bypass essential. How this is achieved is far from clear, as the city is strangled by the National Park's control of the water meadows to the north and south of the city. One option would be to put facilities where the people actually live. On top of this, the Ministry of Transport intend redeveloping the Winnall Interchange, which will put even more pressure on that area. Perhaps the impending impact of Barton Farm upon the city will force a change of outlook. I understand sales are lower than anticipated. Maybe potential buyers realise they cannot get out of the place. A radical and far-sighted partial solution would be a western bypass. But I dread to think of the NIMBY objections that will occur, but the alternative is a city slowly choking in a foul soup of its own making. Winchester's location north of Southampton inevitably means even more traffic, but moving traffic creates far less pollution, and the faster it moves, the better. So much for Winchester's efforts to reduce global warming. And that is from Roger Mallin, Goring Field, Takedown, Winchester.
This letter from Jeff Fowler is entitled Theft Distress. Sir, I am a volunteer at the Winchester Hospital Chapel on a Wednesday morning, and we've had a prayer tree in the chapel for several weeks. People were able to come in at any time, day or night, write a prayer on a card and hang it on the tree. However, at some time over the last weekend, probably Sunday evening, April the 28th, some person had come in, taken all the cards off and walked away with the tree. These cards are a symbol of people's distress at maybe the loss of a loved one, a simple request for help or thanks to God for someone's recovery. Whoever is responsible and perhaps reading this, I can only say you have no conscience and have potentially caused a lot of distress to those who have put prayers on the tree. The cost of the tree was minimal, but the cost to other people could be immense. I hope you feel pleased with yourself. How would you feel if you'd used this invaluable service and someone had just dumped your prayer? That's from Jeff Fowler, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And this letter is from Trish Spears and entitled St Cross Park. Sir, I wonder how many of the protesters against improving parking in the St Cross Park are aware that vehicles have been parked on both sides of the park to the hospital for functions and have done so for as long as I can remember. We have lived in St Cross for over 40 years, and the hospital chapel is our parish church, so we are very aware of parking in the meadows. The hospital and church are popular venues for visitors to Winchester and also for concerts, graduation ceremonies, weddings, funerals, christenings, private dinners, prayers, every day of the week, and the very popular St Cross Fete and Michaelmas Fair annually. Most of the people attending these events arrive by car, as park and ride is not always practical for such functions. At present, if there has been heavy rain, parking on the grass is not allowed because of the damage that would occur, so attendees clutter up the surrounding roads, causing problems to the residents. Many more vehicles and heavier and larger utility vehicles are using the park now, with ensuing soil erosion and damage to the grass. Would the protesters prefer to see this damage continue and acerbate, or understand that the trustees' plan is to lay a strengthening surface protecting the grass with a proper access path to accommodate the increased number of vehicles, larger fire engines, and prevent further damage to our beautiful water meadow parkland? We believe it is extremely dear to us, people who live here and use the hospital on a regular basis, and that is from Trish Spears, Kingsgate Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And another letter on the subject of St Cross Park, this time from Dr Marjorie Huntley. Sir, in response to David Firebrace's letter, the Chronicle, April 25th, the logic of using emergency vehicle access as a justification for converting a hectare of historic water meadow into a permanent car park escapes me. Presumably the hospital carries out regular risk assessments and will have routinely consulted Hampshire Fire Service. I know that Winchester College, who face a similar, albeit more difficult, problem, have regular fire service drills involving the pumping of water directly from the river, thereby obviating any risk to the main gate from fire engines. No one disputes the vital importance of protecting the buildings and their occupants. Certainly it would be possible to improve access for emergency vehicles from the south side without building a car park. These are two completely different issues and should not be confused. And that's from Dr. Marjorie Huntley, Grange Road, St Cross, Winchester.
This letter too is about St Cross Park, and it's written by John Seeger Green, who is in fact a resident of the Hospital of St Cross. Sir, whilst I have no wish to reignite the intemperate comments over the proposed occasional use of part of St Cross Park for car parking, one must confess that a sensible and modest proposal was turned into a potential blight upon the landscape by ill-informed exaggeration. As a mere resident of the hospital, therefore as conscient as most of the beauty of our environs, one would like to suggest that the scorn cast upon the suggested stabilisation of the ground to allow car parking is totally misplaced. In this instance, this is a surface covered by coarse meadow grass. Were one to go and look at the stabilised area outside number 9 The Close, which is the cathedral offices, which is a well-kempt and regularly mown lawn, one would see that its perimeter has to be identified by edging stones, as it is otherwise invisible. Given the coarseness of field grass, full of tussocks and never mown short, one wonders how much similar preparation of the ground might ever be seen, let alone considered unsightly. The Church of the Hospital serves not only as the chapel for the hospital, it is the church of the parish of St. Faith's, so it is not unreasonable for those attending services to have car parking available nearby, particularly weddings, funerals and the like. It is not uncommon for cars to be parked in the park, and the stabilisation will stop them becoming stuck there when wet. So writes John Seeger Green, the Hospital of St Cross, Winchester.
And this letter is from Brian Hurst, entitled When the Guildhall Was Burning, and it's accompanied by quite a dramatic photograph. Sir, the Hampshire Chronicle of May the 2nd, in the section looking back, featured the fire in the Guildhall on April the 28th, 1969. The photo at the bottom of the page showed a running fireman and a group of people in costume. This was the cast of the Winchester Operatic Society, now Winchester Musicals and Operatic Society, who were about to perform the Offenbach operetta La Vie Parisienne. The cast had just changed into costume when the fire broke out. The performance that evening was for the senior citizens of Winchester, who all arrived in coaches and stayed to witness the fire brigade in action. We spent a worrying evening checking our insurance policies to see if we were covered for smoke damage to the costumes and scenery. Performances resumed the next day as normal, and the photograph shows a fireman sprinting to his action station and the cast of the dramatic production watching the drama unfold in 1969. And that's from Brian Hurst, Mulverton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, which we have from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago. And reference to the fire at the Guildhall, we'll hear something else about that as well.
Yeah, 200 years ago. This is from the Hampshire Chronicle of Monday, the May the 10th, 1819. Two items. Our city sessions were held on Thursday, but nothing occurred worthy of note. Secondly, a calamitous accident occurred this morning to Mr. Keel of Wickham, who, while riding home with some friends from Portsmouth, when near the poorhouse near Kingston, his horse fell and killed him on the spot.
Oh, goodness. Gosh. This is 100 years ago, Saturday, May the 10th, 1919. The ball, which for many years was organised on behalf of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, was not only a popular gathering to aid a good cause, but was regarded as one of the principal social events in Winchester. It generally was held on a date in the Christmas season, and there was one on January the 1st, 1914, with that fateful year ended for the period of the war anything in the nature of festivities.
And this item is from 50 years ago, on Saturday, May the 10th, 1969. Council employees, the fire and police services and members of the public were all praised for their part in protecting the Guildhall during the recent fire in a statement issued by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Stuart Green, this week. There has been a great spirit of cooperation, he said. From the time the fire started, the council and the staff operated as a team to deal with the difficulties. He thanked in particular the Hampshire Fire Service, whose prompt action averted a major disaster and who, during the height of the blaze, tackled it with bravery and determination. Of the Hampshire Constabulary's role, he said they efficiently and tactfully maintained safety and order during the time and for some days after. He also turned to the general public and said, "The willingness shown by all, not only in helping during the height of the fire, but in the days that followed, deserve an expression of our appreciation."
And 25 years ago, on Friday, May the 6th, 1994, Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council are putting a late proposal today, Friday, to the Crown Estates Commissioners and Ministry of Defence for the development of Peninsula Barracks. Bids for the development close today. The Hampshire Chronicle has learned that it will take close on £1 million to make the building safe and watertight after many years of neglect. The Ministry of Defence and Crown Estates may pay for this and dispose of the buildings on the basis of a peppercorn rent. The city-county initiative is not actually a bid, but an umbrella plan that would facilitate development. The county and city have worked on the proposal intensively in recent works. The hope is that government will look favourably on it following recent discussions. The MOD and Crown Estates, through their London agents, have invited the bids by developers, either for the whole of the 16-acre site or for the lower barracks only. Central in the Hampshire authorities' approach is that a situation should not develop whereby the lower barracks only is developed and the upper barracks is left to decay. Essentially, the proposal envisages the setting up of a trust for development of the upper barracks, which would be managed by the city. Winchester School of Art would like to be on the site, since it needs more space for teaching, for accommodation for students and a library. Museums could also be situated there.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, which will be followed by a letter from Westminster and then a first person.
So on to the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and the headline of it is, "Where do the Lib Dems go from here?" The Liberal Democrats are back. After nearly 10 years in opposition, they have resoundingly won back control of the City Council, gaining 5 seats from the Conservatives in the biggest swing in years. The Lib Dems will say their success is the result of hard work, etc. And whilst that undoubtedly has some force, The issue of Brexit cannot be denied as the main issue. In wards such as St Michael in the heart of the city, many Remain-supporting Tories are said to have switched to the Lib Dems. The Lib Dems have made great play of the leisure centre exploiting criticism of the scaling back of the plans for a 12-court sports hall down to 8. Although building work has started, they now have the chance to look at amending the contract. The contractor, Wilmot Dixon, is surely unlikely to quibble about doing a bigger scheme. Silver Hill and Station Approach are different challenges. The signs were that the Tories had taken on board criticisms about the size of the plans. Station Approach remains a vast project. Here's the Lib Dems' opportunity to mould it.
And this week's letter from Westminster is from the MP George Hollingbury. The future of vehicle transport is electric. Although, interestingly, electric cars have been around since the horseless carriage first came onto the scene back in the latter stages of the 19th century, petrol back then was simply better. But thankfully, it soon won't be. The government has set a target for up to half of all new car sales to be electrified by 2030, with a ban on petrol and diesel vehicle sales by 2040. So the move away from traditional fuel is on its way. The technology is also advancing at quite some knots. The average range of electric cars available to buy in the UK now, 202 miles and battery charging times, are falling. In tandem with this is the widespread and justified concern about pollution in our cities and climate change. We need cleaner air, and we need to move away from our reliance on fossil fuels. Electric ticks the boxes. However, electric cars are not a complete solution to how we cut emissions and pollution. The fact is, the electricity needed to charge the car's battery also needs to be cleaner if there is to be real benefits. The UK is a global leader in renewable energy, with more than 25% of our electricity now generated from sources like wind and solar, but other countries are not quite so green. There is also environmental cost to the mining the minerals needed to make the batteries. Battery manufacturers are struggling to secure supplies of batteries' key ingredients, cobalt and lithium. They are expensive, and there are limited places they can be mined. Many countries see this scarcity as a real problem, and in the US, an American Mineral Security Act is being discussed by lawmakers that would secure a supply chain of the minerals needed to make the vehicle batteries. However, moving away from international concerns, for the average motorist, practical problems still abound. The cost of electric cars is much more than ones with an internal combustion engine, because the battery is the most expensive component. Technology is making them cheaper to produce and more efficient, but price parity with a petrol car is still some years away. Charging times are a problem too. Some cars can charge in 30 minutes, but others need 24 hours. And the charging points? Well, there are around 22,000 in the UK, which is simply nowhere near enough. The government is acting by offering grants to local councils to install charging points, but again, this will take time. Clearly, more will need to be done by successive governments, manufacturers and other authorities to grow the necessary infrastructure to support the move to electric. Undoubtedly, the 21st century will become the electric century. Necessity means we need to clean up our act across the globe, and not having millions of diesel and petrol cars emitting pollution and greenhouse gases has few, if any, downsides. However, we need our houses in order globally in areas such as energy generation, if we are to really embrace the green potential of electric cars in the years to come. And that is written by George Hollingbury, MP, who's also Minister of State for Trade Policy Department for International Trade.
And first person this week is written by George Hayter, and it's entitled Now Fire is the Enemy. It's about time we put an end to a vast epoch in the history of humankind. I refer to the approximately 1 million years that man has been using fire. Surely we forward-looking Hampshire people should be at the forefront of global progress in banishing flames and smoke. Fire can be a jolly nice thing. Country pubs with an inglenook fireplace come to mind, along with sizzling barbecues in summer and neighbourhood bonfires on November the 5th. But fire ain't so nice when it's burning buildings or dealing death. And smoke is said to be deadlier than flames. For many of us, smoke will be our slow killer, polluting the air wherever we go and eventually shortening our lives. Historians reckon man mastered fire at least 400,000 years ago. It was a huge advance. People don't realise that the real fast food revolution didn't have to wait for McDonald's. The timely invention of cuisine by fire equipped Homo erectus back in the Ice Age meant less time on foraging and no more hours wasted on prolonged chewing of raw vegetation. Speedier ingestion of calories freed up time for man to invent worthwhile things like technology and civilization. Crucially, experts say, less struggle to feed themselves had the evolutionary effect of enabling our Pleistocene ancestors to carry the extra bodily luggage of a big brain. So our friend fire made us clever. But there was a downside. It seems there was no getting away from harmful smoke once man had fire. Their caves must have been full of the stuff. Even when man progressed to huts, smoke still filled their homes and their lungs. Ye beams in oldie cottages originally were coloured black, not by paint, but by smoke. Chimneys have been around only a few hundred years. Before that, the fire was in the middle of the floor and smoke stayed in the room because its only way out was a small hole in the roof. Currently, fire seems to be increasing. Soaring world population means more cooking and heating with wood fires in poor countries and more power stations burning things in richer countries. Around the planet, ever more cars, ships and planes burn petrol, diesel and paraffin in their engines. Planes are the biggest problem. Airfares are low and flying is so popular that pollution from fuel-guzzling jets looks set to continue soaring with no end in sight, despite minor improvements to aeroplane design. My unresearched guess is that about half the world's open fires are tiny ones, measuring under 1 cubic centimetre. These are the glowing ends of lit cigarettes. Around the world, smokers start 6 trillion of these irritating little tobacco fires every year. Continuing popularity of cigarettes in poor and less educated nations provides scant hope that the 13-figure fag number will decline soon. But there is some hope. Smoking is down in the West, where health concerns are making cigarettes uncool. Thank goodness smoking in public rooms is a thing of the past. The West is also benefiting from the disappearance of the thick coal smoke of the Industrial Revolution. Power stations burning fossil fuels also seem to be heading for decline. The cost of new no-burn energy sources, such as solar, wind and perhaps tide, is coming down. Burning gas is still with us in a big way, but inefficient solid fuel fires for heating homes have almost disappeared thanks to central heating. Cycling to work is in fashion, and improving batteries is likely to bring the curtain down on the internal combustion engine by the middle of the century. At the dawn of Homo sapiens, fire brought comfort and improved health. Now it threatens our health and, through global warming, human existence. We can all help speed the end of the fire in our lives by ditching coal, candles, fags, bonfires, wood-burning stoves, petrol, diesel and gas. I'm not saying it's easy. And that was by George Hayter.
Theatre Royal Winchester has launched a new season of performances featuring comedy legends, musicals, great stories, children's favourites, informative talks and dance. The summer season opens with a stage adaptation of the internationally best-selling children's book series Horrible Histories, a brand new balmy Britain. That's on June the 1st and 2nd. While stories from the popular author Julia Donaldson will also be brought to life, The Scarecrow's Wedding on October the 5th and 6th, and a special show presented by the writer herself, The Gruffalo, The Witch and The Warthog. That's from October the 31st to November the 2nd. Families will also enjoy Odd Sock's high-energy version of the Shakespearean classic A Midsummer Night's Dream. That's on June the 25th. Or learn to love yourself in a reimagining of Hans Christian Andersen's Ugly Duckling story in Honk, a family musical. That's on June the 28th and 29th. London Classic Theatre return with the Harold Pinter play No Man's Land on September the 17th and 18th, about two elderly writers whose stories become ever more elaborate as the whiskey flows. There will be a physical rendition of Charles Dickens' classic Bleak House, September the 12th and 13th. Music for everyone's tastes come from a host of world-renowned and West End acts. From the stars of the world's second longest-running musical, Les Miserables, to the Welsh National Opera with their modern retelling of the story of a romantically deluded old bachelor in Don Pasquale. That's on the 13th of July. Bally Central returns to Winchester on June the 4th with an exceptional range of repertoire. See young dance graduates on the cusp of their professional careers. Highlights include Christopher Marnie's Carousel Dancers, inspired by the 1945 musical Carousel by Rodgers and Hammerstein. So for more information about what's happening at the Theatre Royal and to make bookings, you can contact the Theatre Royal on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. You also heard in the headline stories that the Winchester Festival is on from the 5th to the 13th of July. Yeah, sadly, it will be the last Winchester Festival. I believe that programmes for the festival are available from the Tourist Information Centre in the Guildhall. And if you want to find out more information and make bookings for the Winchester Festival, you should contact the Tourist Information Office. Their telephone number is 01962 840 500. That's 01962 840 500. Sunrise and sunset. The sun is rising these days around about 20 past five in the morning, and sunset is at about a quarter to nine in the evenings. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with our recordings, the recordings that you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first item is entitled Major Exhibition Opens at Cathedral. A major new exhibition is set to be launched at Winchester Cathedral. After almost 10 years of planning, Kings and Scribes, The Birth of a Nation, opens on May the 21st. It will highlight some of the nation's greatest treasures and reveal Winchester's pivotal role in shaping early English history. Thanks to a grant of £11.2 million from the National Lottery Heritage Fund and donations from other supporters, a new three-level exhibition space has been created in the south transept to enable all visitors to enjoy, discover and appreciate the cathedral's history. Kings and Scribes, The Birth of a Nation, will take visitors on a journey through over 1,000 years of history, from the birth of the English nation to the present day. One of the nation's greatest treasures, the Winchester Bible, is displayed on the ground floor in a scribe's tale. This magnificent manuscript is the largest and finest of all surviving 12th century English Bibles, renowned for its sheer size, rarity, and astonishing artistry. In the south transept triforium, The Birth of a Nation takes visitors on an intriguing journey of discovery to unearth the secrets concealed within the cathedral's unique mortuary chests, believed to contain the remains of pre-conquest kings and bishops. Decoding the Stones is the second major exhibition in the south transept triforium, unlocking the mysteries of the building. It includes important examples of all architectural styles, from the Romanesque, Anglo-Norman, through the developed Gothic to Renaissance. Finally, visitors will be able to explore the realities of monastic life at Winchester Cathedral Priory on the mezzanine level, with a fascinating rolling programme of displays from the cathedral archives.
This article is entitled Traditional Folk Dancing, Back on the Streets of City. Traditional dancing returns to the streets of Winchester on Saturday, May the 18th. Mayfest will see dancing, music and market stalls together with a ceilidh in the evening. To date, 39 sides have been confirmed to dance at the Buttercross, High Street and Museum Square. The Great Hall will also open its doors to Morris teams, providing a truly iconic setting to our traditional dance displays. St Morris's Covert will be used for Appalachian dancing, while the ancient St Lawrence's Church will host the Southampton Folk Orchestra, Folk Active and the Hampshire Youth Folk Ensemble. The Brook Shopping Centre will also host teams performing throughout the day. Various styles of Morris dancing will be on show, from the different traditions found across England, Cotswold, Border and North West Clog. Within each style, there are traditional dances from different villages and communities, so there will be plenty of variety, from the traditional to the culturally on-trend. There will also be stave dancing and rapper sword dancing, again English in origin, but quite different to Morris dancing. As well as ongoing performances throughout the day, most sides will take part in the Mayor's Show Dance, a 90-minute spectacle performed for the Mayor, with each side performing one show dance. There will be a fantastic ceilidh this year in the Winchester Guildhall, hosted by Shock, with Nick Walden calling and Threepenny Bit playing This Will Be a Sellout. And it's accompanied by two lovely, colourful photographs, one showing traditional Morris men and one showing the rapper dancers, who are all female.
New store at the Brooks. Bookshop chain The Works will be opening its 500th store on Friday at its new location in the Brooks Shopping Centre. To celebrate the occasion, the family-friendly value retailer will be giving away freebies to its first 500 paying customers on the day. The new store will be next to TK Maxx on the lower level, and the opening has generated 6 jobs. Lisa Evans, office manager at the shopping centre, said, "We are delighted the time has finally come for The Works to reopen here."
Donation from the old to the young. Residents of a Winchester care home have donated proceeds from a year's fundraising to a young people's community centre. Colton Care Specialist Dementia Home, St Catherine's View, raised £1,025 for the Unit 12 Community and Arts Centre in Winnell. The centre builds positive community through the arts, sports and support services, and St Catherine's View on Stanmore Lane raised the money through events including a summer fete, a Christmas fair and staff non-uniform days. Youngsters from Unit 12's Integrate Dance Troupe visited the home and gave an energetic performance before being officially presented with a cheque.
And this article is entitled Event to Help People Prepare for Their Death. Funeral professionals based in Winchester will host a unique networking event welcoming the public to talk about death. Richard Steele and Partners has teamed up with the Dying Matters charity and will open its doors to answer everything you always wanted to know but didn't dare to ask. The event will be held at Chesil House on Chesil Street on May the 18th, and a selection of experts and local charities will be on hand to talk, including Winchester Bereavement Support and Winchester Hospice. Ian Steele, Managing Director of Richard Steele & Partners, said, "We are delighted to be hosting this event at our newly refurbished Chesil House, giving the local community the chance to ask all those important questions in a relaxed and informal atmosphere. The day features several speakers on topics including the support available to those who wish to die at home and why it is a good idea to talk about your own funeral. It has been organised as part of the 2019 Dying Matters Week, and this year's theme is Are You Ready? To either start thinking about death or to help someone prepare for theirs. Chelsea Duke, a funeral celebrant who will be at the event, said, "Arranging a funeral involves a lot of decision-making, but making these decisions under pressure in the emotionally charged immediate aftermath of a death is not necessarily the best time to be doing so. Thinking about and talking about your funeral in advance gives you and your loved ones time to consider the options and create the best service for you all. The day runs between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. and people can drop in at any time." Ruth and Janet, celebrants from Humanists UK, said, "This exhibition will give visitors the chance to think about all the issues around getting older and dying and provide answers to the questions that are hard to ask. Professionals will be on hand to provide information, answer those questions and suggest the choices that are possible."
County grants. Hampshire organisations are set to receive a major cash boost. County bosses have granted £25,000 to the Hampshire and the Islands Historic Churches Trust and £20,000 to Trinity Winchester. They also granted £40,000 to the Gosport D-Day commemoration event. Trinity Winchester provides drop-in and women's services at Bradbury House, Derngate, for people who are vulnerable to the consequences of homelessness, addiction, physical and mental ill health, poverty, social isolation and domestic abuse. The charity provides the basics, including hot meals, clothing, washing facilities, a contact address, as well as opportunities to make positive long-term changes through counselling, healthcare and learning. Meanwhile, the money awarded to the Hampshire and Islands Historic Churches Trust will enable the organisation to award smaller grants to churches within Hampshire to help with their one-off projects. The Trust supports work to preserve, maintain or repair the fabric of the church, including modifications for disabled access or for health and safety reasons. The money granted to the D-Day commemoration in Gosport will go towards a special weekend set to be held in early June. This comes as 2019 marks the 75th anniversary of the build-up and launch of the D-Day operation to liberate Europe from the Nazi occupation.
Railway recreates the line for D-Day in 1944. The Watercress line will transform itself into a bustling Second World War railway on June the 15th and 16th for its War on the Line event, which this year will also mark the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings. The event promises to transport visitors back in time to the 1940s to experience the Blitz spirit, and will feature civilian and military reenactors, vintage vehicles, live music, dancing and stalls selling retro wares. Each station will provide visitors with a different experience of life in wartime Britain, from running an RAF plotting room to dancing alongside Now That's Jive Company B. At Ropley Station, visitors will also be able to undergo a 1940s makeover at Pearl's Pin-Up Parlour and enjoy a Spitfire flypast subject to weather conditions. Woody's Mountford, marketing manager at the Watercress line, said, "War on the line is as much about reliving this period as it is enjoying the rush of a steam engine. Whether you want to get involved and dress up in your own period costume, or simply come along and soak up the atmosphere, War on the Line promises to be a truly unique and memorable experience, and a brilliant way to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings." Adding to the event, a self-guided walk will take visitors to key points across Alsford which have links to the American troops who were stationed in the town in the run-up to D-Day.
Big expansion in visitor facilities at Hillier Gardens. Famous Hampshire Gardens are set to be improved as a £1.358 million scheme has been given the green light. German's House Restaurant at Sir Harold Hillier Gardens near Romsey is to be expanded in order to provide 100 extra covers inside and a new outdoor terrace. The expansion will bring the total amount of inside covers to 148, enabling the venue to welcome more visitors and host larger events. The project is part of a transformation programme which will also see a new walled garden at the site. County bosses said details of the wider transformation programme are still being determined, but the expansion of the restaurant represents its first step. According to a report, it is anticipated that works will start this autumn and finish next summer. The gardens and arboretum were created by Sir Harold Hillier and originally formed the grounds around his home.
City Choir celebrates 6th anniversary. The 100-strong Winchester Fusion Choir is celebrating its 6th birthday, having started with just 4 members. On April the 12th, 2013, its musical director, Mary O'Brien, invited only 3 members to form a choir at the Milner Hall on St Peter Street. It grew by reputation and word of mouth and moved to the Discovery Centre the same year. By January in 2014, it had attracted so many members that it was split into 2 choirs. It now has over 100 members. The choir performs an eclectic range of music, including songs from musicals, traditional songs from around the world, gospel, classical, folk and modern songs. Songs are performed a cappella or with backing tracks, guitar and even saxophone. More than £40,000 has been raised for a range of local charities. Concerts have been held in churches, village halls, old people's homes, and even in the open air. The choir is looking forward to its next concert at St Stephen's Church, Oliver's Battery, at 7:30 p.m. All proceeds for Winchester Parkinson's.
This now is the Bill Garum column, an alternative look at the news, and the headline for it this week is City Moving with the Times. On a number of occasions, Bill Garum has aired its frustrations at some of Winchester's grand clocks having no functional use other than aesthetics. Despite a revamp of the Brooks Shopping Centre, which has certainly improved the atmosphere, the timepiece hanging over St George's Street still fails to show the correct time. And in October, whilst walking up the hill of St George's Street, it was noticed that the timepiece above St George's Chambers, home to Barclays Bank among others, also did not show the correct time. One wondered if perhaps Winchester has become the city that time forgot. But it appears not, as the clock is now in working order. Bell Garum is not sure when the work took place, but it's certainly welcome. It has to be noted that the clocks on Winchester Guildhall and above the High Street have been in working order. Perhaps the Brooks could now follow suit. Other notable clocks in the city include those on the RHCH, St Cross Hospital and the County Council building.
The cost of school meals set to increase for parents. The cost of a school meal in Hampshire was set to go up. Parents across the county could be asked to pay £2.40 instead of £2.30 for the hot two-course meal their children will have from September 2019. Unpredictable weather, Brexit, and alternatives to single-use plastic have been blamed for the proposed increase, which is set to be approved by the Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, Keith Manns, at Hampshire County Council, as the Chronicle went to press. However, it is recommended that schools will continue to be charged £2.30 for meals for those provided under the government's Universal Infant Free School Meals Grant. If the proposal is approved, it will mean parents in Hampshire will pay more than in Southampton, where a meal costs £2.10. Hampshire County Council said its in-house catering service, HC3S, continues to deliver efficiencies where possible to offset some of these large inflationary pressures, but added that small changes in costs can have a significant impact on the total cost of the school meal service in Hampshire, as an increase of one penny on the cost of food per meal would cost HC3S an additional £114,000 a year. The council said the price rise represents a 4.3% increase, and it is compared to the hourly pay rate for catering assistants rising by 6.4%. With 90% of the cost of producing a school meal being made up of catering staff and food, there are limited opportunities to reduce these costs further without jeopardising food quality and standards, a report says.
Stepping up to the challenge. 500 people have already committed to taking on the Naomi House and Jack Space Clarendon Way Walk. The 26-mile sponsored walk takes place on June the 2nd, and organisers are keen to sign up more supporters willing to stride out in support of the seriously ill local children. Walkers will set off from Winchester early in the morning, with a full day's hiking ahead. A 12-mile walk is available for those who want a less daunting challenge, starting in Broughton and ending in Salisbury. The longer walk passes through Farley Mount, King Somborne, Houghton, Broughton, Winterslow and Pitton before passing close to the site of Clarendon Palace on the approach to Salisbury. Volunteers from Winchester's Army Training Regiment will help set up the event and man marshal points and water stations. There will also be nearly 100 volunteers donating their time to ensure the event runs smoothly. Charlotte Patrick, events fundraiser for Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "The Clarendon Way Walk is a hugely important event for our hospices, and this year's walk looks set to be a huge success. Walkers can expect beautiful scenery, great comradeship and fabulous weather, alongside unrivalled support and organisation. We hope the event will raise enough money to fund more than 5,000 hours of nursing care, which is so desperately needed by seriously ill local children, young adults and their families. It's a challenging but enjoyable event and a great way to get fit and explore some of Hampshire and Wiltshire's most beautiful countryside. It is hoped that this year's walk will raise more than £100,000 towards the charity's running costs in support of seriously ill children and young adults. The hospice currently cares for more than 325 local children and young adults."
The Entente Cordiale still strong in village. This is the 41st year of twinning between Cole and Common and Saint-Vigor-le-Grand in Normandy, one of the longest surviving active twinnings in the country. 60 twinners, French and their hosts from the village, dined in the community centre on Saturday evening. Many had spent the day at Selborne visiting naturalist Gilbert White's house. On Sunday, following a service at Holy Trinity Church in the village, everybody enjoyed a safari lunch, visiting different homes in the village for each course. The day ended with a very convivial get-together over several bottles of wine as guests of one of the hosts. At the dinner on Saturday evening, a presentation of a framed commemorative certificate was made to the chairman of Cold and Common Twinning, Janet Quantick, by Janine Van Elsu, president of the Saint-Vigor Twinning Association. I beg your pardon, organisation.
Smoking banned at all southern NHS sites. Patients, staff and visitors can no longer smoke on any Southern Health NHS Trust sites. The move follows recommendations from Public Health England and the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, also known as NICE, which state that all NHS sites should be smoke-free by 2019-20. Despite rates being at their lowest level since records began, smoking remains the single largest cause of preventable death and illness in the UK. For every death caused by smoking, 20 smokers are suffering from a related disease. Although smoking has previously been prohibited on Southern Health's hospital sites, discretion has been exercised in the past, allowing limited smoking in some designated outdoor areas. The Trust is now enforcing a 100% ban on smoking on its sites, offering people support to quit smoking.
Spending dawn to dusk on the line. More than 20 people braved the early start as the Watercress Way charity held its fourth dawn to dusk day. The Dawn Chorus walkers met in Martyrworthy in darkness at 4:30 a.m. to start the day. And by sunrise, the group were alongside the river, having heard or seen a record 36 bird species. Then, tempted by a great ride, as well as coffee and cake at the Cricketers in Alsford, a team of mountain bikers set off from Sutton Scotney to cover the 26 miles around the Watercress Way bike route. Among other events, the Ultra Runners took on a marathon too, stopping at some of the sponsoring cafes and pubs around the route while raising money for Parkinson's UK.
Heritage Grant. Live Theatre Winchester Trust, the charity behind Theatre Royal Winchester and Hat Fair, has secured a £9,900 grant for a new project, Home Fires. It will explore the lives of women and children in Hampshire during the Second World War, as well as the role of the Theatre Royal played in the community at the time. Made possible by the National Lottery Heritage Fund, the grant will support the project, which will involve research to produce a pop-up exhibition, show and school workshop. The project will engage with the community by giving a voice to previous generations and creating a pop-up exhibition which will tour public buildings and include newspaper archives, smell pots and audio recordings.
Special link for boy and dog. A four-year-old boy and a French bulldog puppy have struck up an unlikely friendship after being diagnosed with the same heart defect. Mattia Ferrisin, 4, from Four Marks near Alsford, was born with several severe heart conditions. At just 6 days old, he underwent life-saving open-heart surgery at Evelina London Children's Hospital. One of the surgeons who cared for Mattia has a dog with the same problem. Mattia's parents, Heidi and Luca, who are both veterinary cardiologists, carried out similar surgery on the dog Boodoo. Tomorrow, they are taking on a 160-foot abseil to raise money for Evelina London, which is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year. Heidi, 38, said, "We have always felt that we have a huge debt to the staff at Evelina London, particularly, but also the staff at St Thomas's Hospital, where Mattia was born. We are very aware that without their skill, passion and compassion, Mattia may not be here today." During their time at Evelina London, Heidi and Luca got to know Dr. Kay Nasali, a consultant paediatric cardiac surgeon, who was part of the team caring for Mattia. Dr. Sali had recently got a French bulldog puppy named Boodoo, and knowing they were fellow cardiologists, told the couple about a heart murmur that was detected at his first visit to the vet. Luca invited Dr. Sali and Boodoo to his practice, Lumbury Park Veterinary Specialists in Alton. There, Luca discovered that the dog had a ventricular septal defect, a hole in the heart. Coincidentally, one of the defects which had been successfully corrected during Mattia's surgery. Dr. Sali says, following the diagnosis, I wasn't sure how Boodoo should be treated. Luca advised that we should wait and watch, and remarkably, the hole closed without the need for surgery, which Luca tells me is very rare. Boodoo has now made a full recovery. He's not the brightest dog in the world, but he's family.
Emergency vehicles will meet demand. A Hampshire life-saving charity has introduced two new emergency response vehicles to meet a rising demand. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, HIOWAA, has introduced two new Skoda Superbs to their fleet of critical care team vehicles. The decision to introduce an additional two vehicles was made in response to increasing patient demand across Hampshire. HIOWAA Director of Operations, Nick Thwiles, said, "The vehicles increase our chances of bringing our advanced critical care teams to those who need us, even on the rare occasion when the air ambulance is offline. We owe a special thank you to Nats Swanick, who helped to raise funds towards the cost of one of the new vehicles and the essential equipment carried on board. The vehicles are in use 7 days a week and can respond to the more difficult to reach urban areas where the air ambulance may struggle to land. The cars are crewed by a team of doctors and paramedics who are able to deliver advanced pre-hospital medical care at the scene of an accident. The vehicles carry the same equipment as the air ambulance, such as blood and plasma transfusion kits, defibrillators, plus monitors that can record blood pressure, oxygen saturation and carbon dioxide levels. So far this year, the air ambulance has been called out 109 times and the road vehicle 198 times. Since it launched, 8,483 missions have been undertaken.
Sale denied. A Winchester golf club and a house builder have denied the sale of the course on the edge of Winchester. Social media stated that South Winchester Golf Club course has been purchased by Barrett Homes. Richard Adams, club manager, said he had heard nothing of a sale and added, "This is probably the only golf course guaranteed for golf for the next 8 years. 2 years ago, we signed a 10-year agreement for golf for 10 years. I came here 25 years ago and there was talk about developing it then." A spokesman for Barrett Homes said it was not correct that it had purchased the course at Pitt. "They know nothing about it," she said. The 18-hole course on the edge of Winchester is being promoted as a potential site for housing in the Strategic Housing and Economic Land Availability Assessment, better known as SHELAA. I suppose that could be pronounced Sheila. City councillors pointed out that even if the land had been sold, it had not been earmarked for housing.
Rescued raccoons start new life at college. Five new animals have joined Sparshot College's exotic animal collection after being rescued by the RSPCA. The raccoons, originally from East Asia, have become a novelty pet in recent years, despite their complex needs. They were rehomed in the college's animal management centre in a new enclosure that students had built across 6 months. Head of exotics at Sparsholt, Gary Clark, said, "We are very pleased to provide a new home for these ex-pet raccoon dogs as part of the animal collection we maintain here for teaching and training. Our animal management students have grafted for months to prepare the enclosure for them, burying mesh underground, building lots of dens, planting shrubs and grasses, and even making them a pond and roof terrace to enjoy. Already, three students have begun projects on their behaviour, using night cameras to see what goes on after dark. We look forward to discovering more about these wonderful little animals over the coming years." Last year, the number of calls to the RSPCA increased by 13% when compared with 2017, with a total of 1,175,193 calls being made to its 24-hour cruelty hotline. Stephanie Jason, RSPCA's Senior Scientific Officer, said, "We're so pleased we were able to introduce and integrate these five individuals into a bonded group, and it's wonderful to see them settling in so well at their new home at Sparshall College. In some cases, we believe owners take them on simply because they believe they will be easier to care for than other animals."
Boutique raises over £37,000 for cancer charity. Alsford Boutique Moda Rosa stage a spectacular fashion show to raise over £37,000 for Breast Cancer Haven Wessex, the charity that provides specialist support to anyone affected by breast cancer. More than 250 customers, VIPs and celebrities attended the event, hosted by Steve and Linda Garnett at their home, Byton House, in Byton. Guests enjoyed an English sparkling wine reception, sponsored by local vineyard Louis Pommery, before being treated to a contemporary dance duet performed by the renowned company Wayne McGregor, introduced by BBC South Today presenter Sally Taylor. The event was compared by ITV's Alastair Stewart with professional models walking the runway showcasing the latest spring-summer collections. There was a high-value raffle and an entertaining live auction by Henry McCowan, who managed to sell some incredible money-can't-buy lots, generating over £16,000 alone for the charity. Breast Cancer Haven is a national charity with a centre based in Titchfield, Hampshire. It provides specialist and individual support to anyone affected by breast cancer. Each visitor receives a carefully designed programme of treatments, such as acupuncture, reflexology, counselling, nutrition advice and hypnotherapy. Sally Hillier, fundraising manager for Breast Cancer Haven Wessex, said, "It costs £1,000 to treat each visitor, and so this incredible amount of money will enable us to support many people affected by this devastating disease."
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who are Sue Frain, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks also to our various technical teams. And thank you very much to our readers, who are Barbara Kearns.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Katie Watkins.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. Okay, that's us.
Oh, relatively painless.
Yes. Man, that's about the quickest I've ever known it.
Oh, very efficient. Okay, yes. So what normally holds you up then?